So hi, I'm Andrea Cornell with AmChip. We're going to take a little bit of a different approach here to measurement around children's special health care needs and actually start with the life course approach and then zoom into that particular population. And I just want to acknowledge a number of my colleagues at AmChip that have worked on this project, and then also Bill Sappenfield, who was a consultant to this project and has been a tremendous resource as it's been moving forward. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So there's a lot of goals for this presentation. I think what we'll do in the interest of time is focus mostly on the process for the Life Course Metrics project that took place within AmChip, and then we'll describe some of the indicators measuring issues affecting children with special health care needs, and if we have time, I'd love to go into some of the challenges and opportunities in measurement that the state teams identified. So for those of you who are not familiar with AmChip, we are the Association of Maternal and Child Health Programs. We're a national resource, partner, and advocate for state public health leaders and others working to improve the health of women, children, youth, and families, including those with special health care needs. Our mission is to support state maternal and child health programs and provide national leadership on issues affecting women and children. And AmChip's vision statement is a society where healthy children and healthy families live in healthy communities. So just a little bit more practically, essentially our core membership are state public health leaders that work in maternal and child health programs, but we do work with a number of collaborating partners and individuals within these agencies that are working to improve the mission or to improve women's and infant health across the United States. So the Life Course Metrics Project was really born of some growing momentum around the life course approach. We've heard it being a core focus across the presenters thus far, and we'll be continue on through this session, and it's been well represented within the MCH section at EPHA. But the kind of growing momentum for this project in the immediately previous years, in 2010, the Maternal and Child Health Bureau published a concept paper on the life course approach, which really signaled to the states a formal adoption of the life course approach. So especially those agencies receiving the Title V block grant funds, with MCHB really being the administrator of that program, this signaled to them that while they've been using the life course approach to frame their work for so long, this was a formal adoption. This was a new opportunity for them to really claim that and look at their issues, look at their programs and policies through that lens. And I think that the momentum further grew from that in 2011 when the State Systems Development Initiative in their application guidance specifically encouraged states to focus on developing life course performance metrics. And so that really called for states to ask, you know, what are life course performance metrics and how can we develop a standardized approach to measuring the life course? And so that's really where this project was born from. So the Kellogg Foundation funded AmChip in 2012. To help to develop some standardized metrics to measure the life course approach in maternal and child health. And we were very excited to partner with Kellogg in that work. I think, like my colleagues, I'm probably going to gloss over the life course approach a little bit just because it's something that's so much a part of our heart now in maternal and child health, and it's very a key component of how we do this work. But I will say that the national expert panel and the state teams that worked on this project really work to wrap their arms around defining the life course in a way that can be used for measurement, but then also really being reflective of the socio-ecological model too. And so this was something that was an ongoing, I would say, a good challenge in trying to move from theory into measurement with the life course approach. So we'll go through some of these. You probably recognize many of these pictures. So the purpose of the Life Course Metrics Project was to develop tools to help state maternal and child health programs and their partners emphasize a life course health perspective throughout the key activities of MCH programs in the state, so assessment of risks, capacity, and services, planning of programs, monitoring and evaluation of outcomes, and engaging and educating partners. And so the project was guided by a national expert panel of about 27 individuals that were experts in life course theory and translation of theory into practice. And they really did much of the conceptual groundwork for this project. And part of, I'm showing you here, a part of that conceptual groundwork. So if you're going to propose a series of metrics that are reflective of the life course approach in maternal and child health, where do we start? And so they worked on looking across the different population groups across the lifespan, but then also trying to hone in on four different domains, so risk, services, outcomes, and capacity, trying to ensure that this indicator set reflected the breadth and robustness of the topics and issues that are so much of interest to the maternal and child health community. And I want to say a big thank you to the state teams that participated in this project. In the summer of 2012, AmChip announced the 7 state teams that had been selected through a competitive process. So we released a request for applications, and we got many more applications from states than we could accept, unfortunately. But we wound up selecting these 7 state teams who really were boots on the ground in wrestling with so many of the issues around developing metrics for a life course approach. And we were very impressed. And so that happened last summer. So in July 2012 is when we announced these state teams and really started doing this work. Part of the application process and really kind of core to the process for the Life Course Metrics project, too, was the selection of state team members. So we encouraged states to identify individuals from programs, policy, epidemiology, and especially community members, too, to ensure that the metrics that were selected were really reflective of the issues that were important to communities within the state. And so we were excited to work with such diverse members of these teams, and we thought that that brought a great lens to this work. So over the year of the selection of the Life Course Metrics, we worked with 8 different criteria. And so these 8 criteria helped to identify indicators, potential indicators for the life course approach, and then help to select and vote upon those indicators throughout the process. And so there were 3 data criteria, and this data criteria helped to root the states in identifying indicators that help to measure a life course approach in maternal and child health, identify indicators that could be used today. So I think there are a lot of things that states want to be able to measure, but if we don't have an available data source, if we don't have a data source that's of high quality, that's not going to necessarily be very useful for states who are so eager to apply the life course approach measurement in particular to their programs and policies. So that really was a major factor that contributed to what indicators could wind up in the final set. And then we applied 5 different life course criteria. So these reflect many principles that are key to the life course approach. Implications for equity was a space for us to discuss the ability to eliminate disparities in a particular health issue. Public health impact, what would it mean to make a change in this indicator? The ability to leverage or realign resources was a space to talk about novel partnerships and different ways to really make a change in this indicator. We tried to get at some of the intergenerational aspects, individual child health, then also family health and community context, and then consistent with the evidence base around the life course approach. So we wound up with 413 proposals early in the process. So we opened it up for public comment, and then the state teams got to propose some indicators that could wind up in this final set. Of those 413 proposals, we applied the life course and data criteria and wound up honing it down to 104 indicators. Those 104 indicators went forward into very thorough write-ups. So we had to really cull the evidence and look through and see what really is out there about this indicator, and we needed to write it up so that we could help states to vote upon them and select those final indicators. And we wound up with 59 indicators in the final set that were decided in June, and we announced the final set in October. And so we have 59 indicators, and they cut across 12 categories. And these 12 categories are exciting because they are meant to build bridges in maternal and child health, and so to identify new partners. So they're phrased in ways like mental health, childhood experiences. Social capital was one that was particularly exciting. It includes things like voter registration and incarceration. So it's a discrimination and segregation, actually. We have an indicator like bullying, for example, in there, but then we also have some more classic discrimination measures in there. So we're excited that these help to build out bridges to many other partners that we're excited to reach out to and really help to be a communication tool. So right now the indicators are available online. They're at www.amchip.org/lifecourseindicators, and I have that web address later in the presentation. The interactive tool allows you to sort the indicators by category, domain, so those 4 domains that the National Expert Panel helped to identify: risk, outcomes, services, capacity. So you can sort them by that, and you can also sort them by data source. That was something, as we spoke with the epidemiologist, that was something that was very critical in being just honoring their process in terms of how they would go about calculating these indicators. And these indicators, the write-ups that the state teams worked on, are being made available in a rolling fashion right now. So I'm showing you an example of the Children, Youth, and Special Healthcare Needs Indicator. These narratives, some of them are available online right now, but they're going to be made available in a rolling fashion throughout the end of this year. And that's just to really ensure that this can be as useful as possible and that we're connecting all the dots in terms of making this information available. there is also a section which we're very excited about is notes on calculation. So among the resources that we're making available on the website, we're actually creating a national comparison set. And so for states that want to go ahead and calculate these indicators, there's national comparison statistics already up there for those indicators so that you have a place to start, which was something that through our public comment process we found was absolutely critical for the states. And then we wanted to ensure that we weren't overwhelming states with another indicator set, more things to measure. And so what we did is we did a crosswalk with other indicator sets to show that many of the indicators in the final set are being calculated for other reasons within your state. So we aligned the indicators with similar indicators in other indicator sets. So you see things in there like healthy people. Objectives, National Quality Forum was one place that wanted to ensure that we were covering. So like I said, on the website, and there's the web address, amchip.org/lifecourseindicators, we have national comparisons available, and then we also created a short list of indicators. So 59 indicators is a lot, and to help states in giving them a place to start, but also a communication strategy, we wanted the state teams voted on the priority indicators that they felt best reflected the robustness and the breadth of the final set. And so while these aren't necessarily the most important indicators, they felt that they absolutely reflected that final set. So you'll see they cut across the categories, adverse childhood experiences, experiences of discrimination among children, preterm birth, stressors during pregnancy, incarceration rate. So these were indicators that the states felt very strongly about. So I just want to spend a few minutes, because we did do a crosswalk of these indicators to pull out the issues influencing and affecting and really reflecting issues facing children with special health care needs. And we were excited, depending upon how you slice and dice the indicators, that at least 10 of the indicators really touched on core issues for children with special health care needs. And that will be, I'm excited to share too, that a number of states who are starting to use these indicators are already thinking about pilot projects around these specific indicators. So we do have the prevalence of children with special health care needs, so a percent of children 0 to 17 with a special health care need as measured by the National Survey of Children's Health. We have EPSDT reflected in this indicator set, early intervention. We had a wonderful conversation with the state teams about medical home, battling whether we needed a separate indicator for medical home for children with special health care needs or including children with special health care needs in an overall medical home indicator. And they felt very strongly that this be a group that should be recommended for as a modifier to this overall indicator so that states are encouraged to calculate medical home for children with special health care needs when they're doing this calculation overall. And then also delay in care, which is a critical issue for children with special health care needs. And then we have other indicators like asthma ER utilization, really focusing on uncontrolled asthma, depression among youth. So while this is a little bit more of a screening indicator, as we think about mental health among youth and we think about children with special health care needs, getting at that piece is really absolutely critical. And then the states that worked on the preterm birth and small for gestational age narratives really wanted to focus on these two indicators as reflecting the life course implications of being born preterm or small for gestational age, both for the child and for the family and the community. So we're excited to see that emphasis. So we did have a number of indicators that were considered through this process that weren't included, and for many different reasons, we can go into some of those details. I know the states would have really enjoyed including many more indicators that were related to children with special health care needs or got at some critical screening and critical predictive and causal factors around health issues facing youth, but unfortunately, we couldn't include everything in the final set. So I think in the interest of time, I do want to at least touch on why doesn't the final set include indicators related to birth defects or congenital anomalies. This was a really hard discussion for the states. The final indicator set actually doesn't include, like, infant mortality. It doesn't include maternal mortality. It doesn't include many mortality and a lot of kind of hard stop to these indicators around birth defects or congenital anomalies. As well, because they wanted to get at causal factors. They wanted to start to parse apart some of those causal factors so that we could try to think about interventions in a different way. So this was a tough decision for them, but it was especially having such wonderful representation across the groups in the state teams. It was a hard decision, but they feel very confident that many of the conditions that they chose to include do get at some of those causal factors, and they feel really strongly about that. This is a question we got often is why aren't there more resiliency measures? And it's just as a public health community, we don't focus on resilience very well. And so we do have a lot of lessons learned from this project, and we are going to be working on a paper from this project and focusing on resiliency measures and taking a life course approach to maternal and child health will be absolutely critical. So I think in the interest of time, because I know I'm running short on it, we did face a number of different challenges for this project. I won't go through all of them, but there is this tension between what's available on a state level and what's available on a local level, and we have been working very closely with NACHO and some of our other partners on trying to get at that tension, trying to parse it apart, and trying to be useful for those EPIs that are working on a local level and how we can help them to work on a life course approach. And my last comment is there's a lot of opportunities on the horizon just because the Kellogg funding for this project actually concluded at the end of September. And just because we're releasing the final set this winter does not mean that this work is stopping. We've been having some wonderful conversations with different groups, including the CDC MCH EPI assignees on identifying different projects. And the children, youth with special health care needs kind of subset is an area that's of great interest to the group. And so we're very excited about that. So there's the web address, and I'm happy to, I know I didn't bring copies of the final set with me, but I'm happy to email them to you if they're of interest to you, and we will be having a webinar on the final set on November 19th, which I'm happy to share more information to. Thank you.
That is wonderful. I'm excited to go.